Here's Bunting for Marner with Matthews. Marner closes, shot, scores! Yes, yes, yes! Number 34 is on the board, and the Leafs on the lead again!
Boy, does that sound sweet. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Joe Bowen. Thank you, Toronto Maple Leafs. Thank you, Austin Matthews.
The Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish.
I'm stunned. I'm still stunned. I woke up this morning, and I just, like, couldn't believe that that happened last night. I still cannot believe the way that that happened last night. The Toronto Maple Leafs are up in a series. You could say that the series hasn't begun until the Toronto Maple Leafs have an opportunity to blow it. But, my God, what a game last night. Ailish Forfar, I know that you were there. Let me just start with this. What was that crowd like when they were down 2-0 after that first period? Did you just basically start to drink because you thought, I have no obligations here to pay attention to this hockey game because this is over?
I will say that it was a bit of a frustrated crowd. They had like one shot. Okay, first of all, that's just like, they're not even putting the puck on net. There's just nothing to build momentum off of. The flow was non-existent, and it started to get a little quiet, a little edgy. There was some shoot the puck chants, which that's never a great thing to hear halfway through the first period. But to contrast that, how that game ended, like you can hear, I have limited voice left. Probably one of the greatest sporting events that I've ever been able to witness live. That was absolutely electric factory. Like I you said you don't have words. I stood there with my jaw open. Like, what just happened? We were all like, what just happened? Like, it was just stunning, incredible hockey to be a part of. But that the fan base at the beginning, we were a little anxious. So I don't blame us.
That first 20 minutes was the worst possible thing that you could have seen.
Yeah.
It was. When the shots were 8-1, and then William Nylander took a penalty behind his own net, just lazy hooking penalty, you thought, oh, okay, these guys just do not have it. They quit in that last game, and they just, for whatever reason, they are just not able to elevate in these moments. Like, it is just not a possibility for them. There is something flawed about them, and this is the difference between a champion, Tampa Bay, and Toronto. And you're just already preparing mentally for... I was anyways going, I can't believe I have to do this show again. And maybe they blow it. And like, of course, the series isn't over. So any crybabies out there that are like, JD, Ailish, Blake, it's not over yet, but the job's not done. Yeah, yeah, of course. But the job felt completely done in that first period. Like, it felt completely over in that first period. They were lifeless. Jack Campbell let in a bad goal. They were giving up bad penalties. And no one seemed to have any urgency other than Jason Spezza, who gave them a good shift. And I actually kind of thought Marner had jump early on as well. But outside of that, boy, you could not find a positive. I wrote down like 20 different things that were going wrong for this team. 20. I was like, go through it. Like, there's, what are you supposed to point to and say, well, this was good, this was fine. Everything was looking bad other than the fact that it was 2-0. Other than the fact that it was 2-0. And they go into that intermission, and now it used to be, do you guys remember there used to be that speech? It was against the Senators, I think, on a hockey night in Canada, where Patrick Marleau, the quiet guy, stood up and spoke in the room to the Leafs, and they went out there and they gave a good effort and they came back. The Patrick Marleau, poor Patrick Marleau, he retired yesterday. So is his speech to the Toronto Maple Leafs young players, because Jason Spezza apparently delivered some speech to Austin Matthews and John Tavares, and they bring it up in the postgame. And it completely shifts the course of time. I think that it also didn't help that, or it did help that they end up getting that lucky bounce, which is what hockey is so many times. But it really felt like that one puck goes in off Tavares' skate. And it reminded me of the Hedman goal in game 2, where you go, you just needed a bounce. to change the course of a game. Sometimes you're feeling snake bit, like the world is against you or that nothing is possible. And all of a sudden those guys looked up at the scoreboard and went, we've been getting dominated for a period and a half and we're down a goal. Our crowd is back in it. We can win this hockey game. And from that point forward, yeah, miracle night.
There's an extra sweetness to that puck bouncing in the way it did, too, because that's a power play that you have due to a too many men on the ice penalty from Tampa, which has been, like, the thing you keep messing up all season long. But I think you're right, JD. There's something that's kind of ethereal and hard to grasp about the energy shift when a bounce goes your way in a series where – and not even a series, in a six-playoff run where you have felt that no matter how well you play, a lot of the time the bounces don't go your way. And I think – you know, I'm not privy to what Spezza's message was. I imagine it was something like, we're not playing hard enough to get the bounces to go our way. So
I imagine it was like, I'm 38 years old and I'm the only one who cares on this team again. What is happening? What are we really going to do this?
I'm 40.
Are we really going to do this again where I'm the only guy who cares? Is this really going to be it? Is this what you guys want? Are you going to break up this room because Jason Spezza is your best forward tonight? Again, like, it would have been pretty simple for him.
Yeah, I bet it would have been. And look, you can, as a player, you can complain about a lot of stuff or you can hang, you know, bad bounces on a lot of things. But the message should have been, okay, well, you don't deserve any of that stuff with the way you played in the first period. So to come out like that and play a really, really strong first couple minutes and then get the bounce to go your way, I think that's affirming probably to, hey, put in the work and, you know, the bounces will, maybe they won't favor you, but they'll even out over the course of time, over the course of a series. So that one was, yeah, that's a huge exhale moment, not just for the team, but for it to be John Tavares and William Nylander who connect on that goal as well. Who were the two guys we talked about a ton yesterday about these guys need to step up? And I know, JD, yours was Austin Matthews, and we'll get to him in time because what a one of the best, you know, until the final goal, he was already turning in one of the best zero-point games I can remember a top Leaf turning in. But, yeah, for it to be Tavares and Nylander who connect on that, all the better.
Well, this is it. It was the perfect game. It was the perfect game. They, for them to have that start, and usually I've said it's funny because in the past when they've had those slow starts and they've won hockey games, I've gone, well, this is almost bad for them because it allows them to kind of have those coasting moments and then they can overcome it with talent. This wasn't that. This was you had to face all of your demons. They were all right there in front of you. Every anxiety. And there's no way. I know that a lot of pro athletes will always say that it's game to game. It's moment to moment. It's not, you're not really thinking about things. There's just no way that those guys sitting in that first intermission couldn't have been thinking about what the future might hold. And I mean that in terms of their legacies, like the doubt starting to creep in, what they'd built as a group, how this was happening, all those things had to be at least in the backs of some of their minds. They had to just be feeling almost like a fatigue of what the future was going to hold. For them to come out.
And maybe that was part of Spezza's message too, of like, look, I'm 38. My career is mostly defined at this point. You guys are in the spot right now where you're defining yours. Who are you going to be?
I like how we get to invent Jason Spezza's speech.
Yeah, it could be a million different things. It's great. It was probably like, something like, oh, boys, we got to go out there and play a little harder. Yeah, sticks on the ice. Let's go.
Guys. Yeah,
by the end of this show, it's going to make any given Sunday look like nothing.
Yeah. I was going to say, when they make the documentary or when they do the TV movie for this run, the Spezza speech is going to be incredible. But for them to face that awfulness and to overcome it in that way where, you know, the way it gets started is with that bounce, right? It's off of Tavares' skate. And yeah, Nylander makes a good play getting it on net. Like, there's many plays preceding it that are good. But that is a lucky bounce where it goes off a skate and past Andrei Vasilevskiy. For it to be John Tavares who makes this patient play behind the goal line and sets up Morgan Rielly, you know, the longest tenured Maple Leaf on a play like that. For Mitch Marner to just be a buzzsaw the entire game, where he has three high danger chances for throughout the contest. He plays almost 24 minutes in the hockey game, and he is just, yes, omnipresent on the ice for the entire thing. For it to be Austin Matthews and him that combine on that goal, for Matthews to have seven hits in that hockey game, seven, a guy that we have just begged to be a little bit more physical, all of a sudden he's playing with physicality. He's winning almost 70% of his draws. He's getting the puck on net. He had five high danger chances. I said I wanted Austin Matthews to be the mutant that he is. That was him. That was a playoff mutant. That was a home playoff mutant. For Jack Campbell to have this thing go against him and have to prove that I'm not fragile, like the way that you guys talk about me sometimes, where one bad thing will happen and I'll crumble and I'll fall apart and you lose all confidence in me. For him to battle the way that he did, like the breakaway save that he made in that hockey game to keep them in it, the countless times where there was traffic in front of the net and Tampa Bay started just throwing things at him and he was making saves with every part of his body. For all of your star players to be involved in that way, for them to all contribute and for them to all be able to look at the score sheet at the end of that game and go, we mattered. We mattered the most. And we beat their stars. This was always the identity of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was always, like we said, that these guys needed to be their best players. That the identity of the group needed to be it was a top-heavy team and that the top-heavy players could dominate. And they were down against the Stanley Cup champions. Every single person on the planet counted them out. They came back. They played their best hockey. They won a game. And I said it, like, that's not how you slay a ghost, is by going up 3-2 in a series. Like, these guys, if you recall, had that moment against Columbus where they ended up coming back against that team late and pouring on all those goals, and it felt like, oh my God, this is the breakthrough. But this is different than that. This is a completely different team. This is a completely different moment in the timeline. And if this isn't a breakthrough moment, nothing will be. But boy, it sure felt like this is something that you can build off of, that this is something that whenever you face resilience, you can kind of pull back to it and say, we're not always just failures. Like, we're able to do this.
I think you laid it out really well for the big four there individually. And if I'm this Leafs coaching staff and I'm this Leafs management, this game is the go-to tape game from now on. And look, I know that Nylander, Tavares, Matthews all score, everyone's on the score sheet, but you could take away any one of those actual goals, and all four of those guys still had a huge impact on the game. Nylander, from the second period onward, was a menace on the forecheck. Matthews was hit, you said it, seven hits. He was hitting everything that moved. He blocks a shot in a key moment. Mitch Marner is standing a guy up at the blue line with a one-goal lead in the third period on the one thing that Tampa has dominated Toronto at, which is zone entries and entering the zone comfortably. His back check is there making a difference. You talked about the Riley goal. The patience Tavares shows there and the poise when he's had a rough series and is maybe feeling, hey, force it. That's a next level high-end play, to have the patience to let that play develop and wait for a hole to open up. I think all four of those guys, and yeah, Jack too, but all four of those guys can look at that game and take away the points. They also had a huge impact on that game, and that's what you need from them, because the points aren't going to be there every single night, and sometimes the bounces aren't going to go your way, but you could still change the game the way those four guys did last night. And that, I think, is what's been missing sometimes in the playoffs for them, is, oh, well, we can't score tonight, and we're the finesse team, so we don't know how to impact the game otherwise.
And what's been missing throughout the playoffs that I saw the most last night was some urgency and some heart and some pride. And that didn't show up until the second period, but it was the most energetic type of play that they've had. William Nylander, and you mentioned him, Blake, I haven't seen that guy play with a smile on his face, like, ever.
He looked horrific in the first period.
In the first period, just got awful. But the rest of that game, you know, he was William Nylander that you want. And that's why we get frustrated sometimes when we talk about him, is because he's that player. Like, we know he is that player. He's an incredible hockey player when he wants to be. And he turns it on, different game. You have the Leafs playing with something to prove, with something to fight for. And whether that was because the crowd got back into it or the Spezza speech or whatever, it was such a sigh of relief, I think, as a fan, just to be there to say, hey, they're just not gonna like throw this one away like they did in Tampa. The difference between going down 2-0 in this game and going down 3-0 in the game previously was that there seemed to be something different about this team when they came out for the second period. You felt it in the crowd. The ice shifted on shifted on a tilt for the Maple Leafs. Tilted. And honestly, I think that was the first time that they've taken the lead back from another team in the series, right? So that alone is, hey, we can do this if it comes down to it the next game and the game after that. Like, you're right, this is the script moving forward, is that you look back on this game as something that you can mimic, whether that's in one more game or one more series, etc.
So when you're in year six of this and you've been bounced in the first round five times, there can be the instinct, I guess, to be like, okay, well, nothing really tells you anything until the series is finally done, because, you know, you've blown this and you've blown that. Well, last night's game had something else in it that we haven't seen from the Leafs in this era. And what that is so they come back, they do this amazing comeback, they go up 3-2, and almost immediately Tampa Bay ties the game. And if there were any residual concern left for you that this game was just a blip and oh, it'll be the same old Leafs eventually, I think back to all the way back to the first playoff series this team played, and they're against the Washington Capitals, and they're a young team. You're supposed to lose that series your first time in the playoffs, really. But game seven of that series, they go 0-0 until midway through the third period. They finally score. Matthews gets one to put them ahead, and then Washington scores almost immediately, and then Washington scores really early in overtime. And it's like, okay, well, missed opportunity there. And they haven't really had a game like that in the losses since, where their backs are against the wall and they make the comeback and then they get the other team's counterpunch. Mm-hmm. Tampa didn't go away. This wasn't like, oh, the first period was game four and the second and third period were like game one and game three. Tampa fought. That was one of the best back and forth hockey games I have ever watched. Take the Leafs element out of it. That was an unbelievable, exciting hockey game. Tampa didn't give any quarter there, and the resiliency and the resolve to stick with it and stick with the plan and not panic and not let that build of, oh, we finally did it, we finally did the comeback, and then Tampa immediately scores, I thought that was great too. That's as big to me as the initial comeback, is they push back and you were ready to parry that counterpunch.
All of that on me is Jack Campbell. The resolve you mentioned and the fortitude, it's completely driven by your goaltender washing away a first period that, you know, wasn't the best. Two goals in the first period, not ideal. Your team's down. There's no energy in the building. He really proved that he can be that guy for the Leafs when it comes down to an important period and a momentum shift. Emotions were so high in that building. For him to be able to internalize what he needs to do to shut out the noise, to focus on making key saves when they mattered, multiple breakaway saves. He's that guy that shifted, for me, the mentality of what the Leafs can do in the second and third period. You know, wash away the first, move on, and he was the guy. And the crowd, kudos to all of us there, but every time he started to touch the puck, soup chance, like, you're getting him back in the game, and it made such an impact when he was starting to stitch together a couple good saves. Just the amount of confidence that gives the rest of the team, and from that moment on, it almost felt like inevitable that there was going to be something spectacular happen in this game, and all that momentum was building. And you know, you kind of felt it's going to be Matthews, it has to be Matthews. And if you were a betting person like I was, you'd be happy with your decision that it was going to be Matthews.
Jack, the MVPs of the game were either Jack Campbell, Austin Matthews, or Mitch Marner. And if you wanted to make a case for any of those three guys, you'd probably be able to make a solid one. What's interesting with goaltenders is, like, when a player makes a mistake, unless it's something aggressively bad, like Nylander taking a penalty, like, right beside the opponent's net, and it materializing into a goal, you don't have the same kind of evidence of a player making mistakes as a goaltender, right? Like, he lets in that first one, and some people are debating, hey, it's still Steven Stamkos, it's still that wrist shot, he still picks that spot. Either way, that's a save you got to make in the playoffs, that's a save you got to make early. And I say it's a save you got to make because Jack Campbell made a bunch of much better saves in that hockey game. The second one is just a great screen by Killorn, but it's two in the back of your net immediately, and you're kind of reeling. Jack was incredible. And I gotta be honest, like, there was actually almost even a moment where I said to myself after watching that game, like, I was proud of Jack Campbell. Like, mm-hmm. Proud of Jack Campbell, saying, Yeah, everyone has doubted you at every point, and no one even expected you to steal a game. And there's this, like, we have this quotient with goaltenders making up for bad goals, right? Where we go like, okay, you let in a bad one, so what point in the game are you back in the good books? I actually think that was done by what? Early in the second period, he had just made so many saves at that point that were big, and you shift from where was that earlier to Jack is keeping them in this hockey game, and it was like that guy absolutely battled. It was incredible to watch him play that way. And so if you're a Leafs fan, again, it's one of those things of, well, when you've pointed to years past, what have you not had? Having your goaltender steal you a game like that, which I think that's what that was. Like, yes, the star players showed up eventually, but Jack Campbell held the fort for that team to get in that hockey game. Like, they showed up midway through the second period. Like, that's when the Leafs decided, okay, we're gonna play hockey now. Like, we're gonna play hockey.
Completely different.
Of course,
it could have been 5-6. And who knows at that team?
But we saw even with the Leafs in the game prior that once it was going to be 3-0, they were toast, and every person knew it. And maybe we don't know anything because we all had our other assumptions throughout this game as it was happening. But it sure felt like that to me, that if Jack Campbell was going to let in one more, that they were finished, that they were toast. He was excellent in that game. I don't know if it changed. Like, you don't feel like the Leafs have the better of the goaltenders anymore. But I will say that after watching Vasilevskiy this series and kind of continuing to go, well, eventually he's going to have one of these games. Eventually he's going to have one of these games. And then to see Jack just, like, actually have that game, you've got to feel like it's a little bit closer. So, yeah, MVPs of the game. I guess, like, we'll talk all about these guys all day long. We'll talk about all these different moments. But this is kind of the question, the foundational question of all of this, because we're very excited and we're ranting about the different parts of the game that impressed us the most. But Does this shift the way that you guys believe in this team moving forward? Like, are you buying this team after a win like that? Because there's now, it's going to shift into the next day of killer instinct talk and whether or not they have it. And all of a sudden, it's going to look very, very foolish if you're back here for a game 7. And it just feels like, not that that was to waste, because you needed to win last night, I think we all agreed. But, like, do you believe? Do you believe that something has materially changed here?
I do. And I am not afraid to say it and to believe it, because the way that they won that game, and you guys said it earlier, was a perfect type of adversity that you overcome. Your stars are stars. And those people that needed to play arrived to the scene. No offense to a camp for an Engvall. You didn't win that game because of third or fourth line scoring or production that isn't something that you're going to rely on down the stretch. If the Leafs can pull out this series, I feel like it's scary to say it, but the sky is really the limit. And the way that they played last night, for me, changes everything, because that was the make it or break it type game. If you go back into the game second period and you haven't shifted your mentality and you're not playing with that urgency and you've shut down, that's kind of what we had maybe expected, right? You surprised me. You showed me something different about this Leafs team. All season long, we've talked about, have they grown? Have they matured? Is this a blip? It really didn't feel like it last night when they were able to flush a first period and come back and be the dominant team, which we have wanted to see all series and which we saw for two exceptional periods. So, yeah, my confidence level has grown. And I do believe that if they can mirror some of the star power and the mental toughness that they had, I believe even more in these Leafs, and I'll stand by that.
I'm with you. I believe a little bit more too, and it's, you know, it's kind of what I said earlier, that this was a novel win. They haven't had a game that played out like this. They haven't had a game where they had to answer multiple question marks of, hey, if you get down early and you have a bad start, can you shake that off? They hadn't done that. Hey, if you do shake it off and you take control back and then almost immediately you get punched back, can you rebound from that? Are you too shaky? Are you too fragile? Well, we hadn't seen that before. We saw it last night. We saw the top four guys be the best four players in the game, or the best top four in the game, all of those things. And I thought the messaging after the game was really strong too, where Keefe says, I don't think tonight is going to matter if we don't take the next step. And look, this is still a really tough playoff series. You're going to go into Tampa against the two-time defending champs. This thing's probably coming back for a game 7. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe that killer instinct is there. You have 1-1 on the road, but this is still a really good team you're playing against. But we talked about it earlier in the series too, is like, hey, if you lose this series or lose a game in this series, at least have it be something where we can go back to the drawing board and point to this, this, and this. Hey, this is where we came up short. Hey, this isn't what worked. Don't leave us with, oh, well, there's ghosts in the locker room. Oh, the Leafs play off demons. And I thought last night was a really good push through it, push through it, push through it, to where, sure, they could collapse from here still, but I'm expecting it less now. I'm expecting if they were to lose this series, it's because the two-time defending champs come through with two really, really strong games, and that'll be disappointing, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Leafs are going to win this series now. But at least it wouldn't be, well, every loss you had was just same old playoff Leafs.
Yeah. I think if they lose now, they've officially blown it. Like, you need to win this series. You're up 3-2. You've got to get this done. And this is what I was talking about yesterday when people were texting in saying, well, if they lose, can I be disappointed because it's Tampa Bay? It's like, yes, because you saw it last night. When that team kicks it into high gear, they are as good as anybody in the NHL. Like, that is just a fact. And we've all seen those moments. And for whatever reason, those moments have never been able to materialize on the big stage. And when they've even done that, they haven't been able to sustain it or close it. So yeah, these are still, like, the put-away game is still going to be the most important one for these guys. Like, again, everybody understands that. But I'm with the two of you in terms of there are lessons I think you need to go through as a team. And these guys have learned all their losing lessons. That was a winning lesson. Like, finally, you got to have a winning lesson. I referenced the game against Columbus where we kind of thought, oh, wow, maybe that was it, right? The 4-3 win in overtime, if you remember, where they scored three goals to tie it. They were down 3-0. They scored three goals to tie it with 4 minutes left in the hockey game. Hyman gets the game-tying goal, and it was Matthews, actually, who scores the one for Toronto in overtime, right? And you went, wow, what was that? Like, now those guys have it. That game was such a weird, freakish, anomaly, bubble game, playing a Columbus Blue Jackets team that you were overwhelmingly more talented than, that you got on top of and that you tied a game. It was just a freak, weird game. Blake, you mentioned it. This was still, when the Leafs took the lead, there was, what, 15 minutes left in the game? There was so much time. That's what was the worst feeling. You were sitting there going, I can't believe I have to watch 15 minutes of this torture chamber and that this is going to be protecting the lead. You know, and you almost go into these defense mechanisms, I think, as someone who follows this team, where when things start to go poorly, you just go, right, like, of course, like even a lead is bad because there's so much time for things to go wrong. And things didn't go wrong. And so I think that for that building, like, for Leaf fans, if they do end up having to show up for Game 7, that it's not going to be a morgue like it was after the first period or early in that second. Like, Ailish, from television side, it was... I actually even almost did have the fan take of, listen, it's all these guys' fault for doing it, but it's so dead in there. Like, you can feel the weight of those ghosts, right, Blake? Like,
we were trying.
That's where you can actually, people say, like, oh, you can't see a ghost. I was like, I can. They're all just, like, they're on the ice and they're in the crowd. Everybody's done for. They won. They learned from winning last night. Like, they really did. And so, yes, again, killer instinct is going to be the thing. It's going to be the name of the game for this team, whether they can do that and close out a series, because they've been in this spot before where they go up and they have good moments, blah, 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 blah. But they've never done it against a team like this. They've never had it in a moment like that. And I think that, to me, honestly, I think Tampa Bay was shocked when, Blake, when they came back and they scored that fourth goal. From that point forward, Tampa was the team that actually looked rattled. Like,
how would you not expect the Leafs to bend after this
that's
long,
it.
Right? And this much sample.
They looked like the bully who was getting beaten up and shocked and going, I'm supposed to be doing this to you. You're not supposed to be doing this to me. And that had to feel good for them.
They were as surprised as we were. And that's okay because of the track record. You obviously want to believe that your team is going to be able to come back and win games when they're down. But has that happened consistently as a Toronto Maple Leafs fan? No. So for Tampa to be shocked, I'm not even surprised, because we all were. You know, you saw so many people quote tweeting their own tweets that said, this is the worst game I've ever watched, and this is now the best game I've ever watched. So when we look at moving forward, and today we can give them their flowers and praise what happened yesterday, which deservingly so, but the biggest thing is going to be Tampa's response. They're back at home. They haven't ever, you know, been able to bounce back from a loss, right? And they've shown that consistently. So can the Leafs use this? And we talk about momentum, but can momentum maybe carry over when there's one more game to win, when you're right on the edge of victory, when you just need to string together enough to clinch a playoff victory? Can you rise to that occasion? Can you see that next game, game six, as the moment to finally eradicate everything from the past, or do you crumble towards that? And that's how we're going to know if last night's win really meant something for this team in terms of a growth and a momentum shift and a maturing. So as exciting as it is, it also gives me a little bit of fear just because it's something that hasn't been done before. But what an opportunity that you have given yourselves on home ice to do this last night, to walk mm-hmm. into Tampa tomorrow with the edge and the knowing, the wherewithal that you've done it, and you're right there on the edge to really put the final stamp on everything. It's so exciting. God, we're lucky.
By the way, well this is, I'm not going to say
able to watch those guys in their prime right now to see Austin Matthews do what he did. That's what I mean. Like, lucky.
You know who's
see...
lucky? I was going to say, Ailish, people of your age who are younger and where, and I thought the same thing looking at the Maple Leaf Square fans, because it's a very young crowd, right? It's a very young crowd that goes down to Maple Leaf Square. I'm going, this must be nice, where the damage for you is just, you know, stretching back a very short period of time. Like, you know, that the damage is contained to this era and to these teams. It's not lifelong where you've just felt this now, this trauma buildup where you're just ready and you have those scars of, oh my God, this is actually going to happen again. This is going to happen. Yeah, lifelong. Yes, lifelong.
Just a shorter lifelong.
Shorter lifelong, yes.
But I feel, as we said, I do feel different about it this time. That's where I'm like, I feel a little bit lucky that things are going well right now, but mm-hmm. it can rapidly shift. I'm going to enjoy it while I can.
Killer instinct. By the way, Sheldon Keefe, credit in this game. His group didn't look prepared, and I thought that this was going to be a fire Sheldon Keefe day off of the beginning. It still might be because, again, Jason Spezza, I think that at the end of Spezza's career now, they're going to say, hey, do you want the Leafs head coaching job? Because it's yours if you want it. And Sheldon will have to move down the bench, whatever, in order to retain Jason Spezza. But what a vindication moment, sticking with this blue line and everybody kind of criticizing it and everybody taking their little shots and everybody saying that, oh, they should have gone with Liljegren and doing all these things. I thought Justin Hall, like he and Giordano looked like their best guys. And yes, Morgan Riley had the huge goal, and Riley had great moments in that game, but mm-hmm. Hall was phenomenal in that contest. Lyubushkin had real moments in that game. Again, he did. The blue line is set, okay? Like, we don't have to do this anymore. He was right. And I actually thought that, listen, I'm sorry, but the reporter that asked that question about Justin Hall and the way they framed it, he should have to... like, apologize to Justin Hall. Like, straight up, he should have... It's like, I hope that he had to ask a question at the podium about Justin Hall or something along those lines, because, yeah, that I think Justin Hall really did stick it to Toronto last night, to all the people who have been calling him the worst defenseman and all these different things, the whipping boy status. Like, you really saw him show up and deliver one, and I think that that was the theme of that entire night, is almost every doubt that you had in that team, every whipping boy, quote-unquote, whether it was like Nylander scoring that goal or Tavares, who had been ripped on for the entire series about being washed, whether it was... Marner, who has been called so many times like a playoff choker, who, again, Marner was their heartbeat from a offensive and player standpoint up until that moment. And honestly, throughout the game, like, I think that you could still make the case that he was the second best player to Matthews. In fact, I think that there's no stronger case. But every single guy that had been taking heat showed up. And that just has to feel like a huge weight off of their shoulders heading into this game, but also just like, again, a reminder of Sheldon Keefe has a pretty good pulse of this team.
Even sticking with Spezza, where, you know, there was an argument to be made, and some of our guests on this show made it, that, hey, mm-hmm. you go back to the physicality, because Spezza's the value he brings in that small role hadn't led to anything over those two games. And you see where, obviously, the leadership and his play in that first period where he's the only guy going, even that comes through. And, yeah, Justin Hall had a great game. I went back and watched game four. Yeah, not yesterday, the day before as well. And he was better than I'd given him credit for in that one, too. He was a monster on the PK. I wasn't as impressed with Lyubushkin as you were, but you still see the moments that they want him out there for, that physicality mm-hmm. in the defensive zone and that nothing easy over the blue line kind of stuff. I think there's a good message, too, to, hey, you guys lost this and we're going to stick with it. The solution isn't up in the press box. It's in this room. It's on this bench. And, you know, I don't expect any lineup changes for game six after that one. That's for sure.
No, no, it's going to end up being the same. I will say that, yeah, Jason Spezza, I think he played under 6 minutes.
Right? Under six mm-hmm. minutes, yeah.
These were the individual high-danger chances for leaders in the game. Matthews with 5, right? Incredible game. Like, he just saw some. There's just no question about it. Bunting, 3, feasting off of Marner and Matthews. Marner, 3, right? Like, that line, again, you needed your best line to dominate in the series. It was always the key. It was always the path forward, and they were incredible. Like, between those guys, having 11 high-danger chances for, outrageous. William Nylander, 3. The next player on the list is Jason Spezza. In those 6 minutes, he had 2 high-danger chances. He had 2 big opportunities. And, again, they were noticeable minutes. There's a reason why he can't play more than 6 minutes. I'm not trying to praise him and say that he was one of the best players on the ice. But, again, in the minutes that he was given, he made an impact. And it's why he should have been in this series the entire time. And it's why he's not coming out. Let's take a break. Let's do the A-list. What a day. Just reach out anytime. You know, you got thoughts on this game. Do you believe now? Like, do you believe differently? How much did last night change your perception? You can text 590-590. You can also reach out at JD Bunkus, at Alish Forfar, and at E. Blake Murphy. The A-List next on the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan.
Breaking down everything in Leafsland better than anyone. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm still riding the high of last night, and I got some fun stuff for us today in the A-list. So let's get going, Josh.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So we all play fantasy sports. We're in fantasy sports leagues. Right, fellas? We love competing against our friends.
Only fantasy football now, but yeah.
Okay. Well, fantasy football comes with, you know, the last place person usually having to do something or having to redeem themselves for a disappointing season. And sometimes we see pretty outrageous ones, tattoos, streaking. Mm-hmm. Well, one group of guys made their buddy finish last, go play in a U.S. Open qualifying golf tournament where he had obviously absolutely no business playing in a U.S. Open qualifying golf tournament. The guys that get paired up with him are serious golfers, of course, and this kind of goes viral online after they send out a tweet of a screenshot of a text message I guess the guy sent to his buddy, and he says, played at the U.S. Open local today, teed off on the first hole, and one of my partners wasn't there, so we wait a minute, we get word that he's on the wrong tee, so first of all, terrible start. Comes over to us, hits his tee shot 10 feet. He's 5 over after 2 holes. And his caddy goes, hey, buddy, we're so sorry. My friend here lost a fantasy football bet, and his punishment is to play this tournament. So the guy continues with this text. Absolute joke to me and my partner. Terrible, terrible punishment. Not to me, but not to him, but to us. Not fun to play with. The guy ends up shooting 112, 40 over. Somehow he still got 4 pars, which is shocking enough. But
good for him.
Good for him. That's just like the roller coaster of emotions. But the thing here is, if you're going to punish your buddy for coming last in a fantasy football league, maybe don't put him in a serious golf tournament where people are trying to No? Okay. Oh, I was. I don't know. No I way. Think that sucks
that's
for them.
You know what? This is the biggest. This is why golf is the worst, is because everybody's a huge crybaby, and nobody. Like, this is the only sport where, oh my God, God forbid there be any noise, where these guys have one tournament a year, the Waste Management Open, where fans make noise, and every year you got like Justin Thomas out there going like, it's too much. Why were the people so loud here? Golf is the ultimate chicken sport in that anybody, it's like, it's all you. There's nothing else to blame. And so any little piece of adversity, any little morsel of a something that you can blame other than your own performance, you cry about it. Like, what is this U.S. Open tournament, like, qualifier? Like, if a fan can just register for this.
So, no, they fudged all his information, gave him a lower handicap.
Good for them.
So then they could get him in, because you can't, like, you and I can't just sign up for this. So his buddies, like, fudged his scorecard, yeah. Got him in, which is, you know, not obviously fair.
Who cares? It's
and
a U.S. Open
he shows up
tournament.
And like, is awful.
These guys crying and going, not fun to play with. Like, that's your adversity? That's what's holding you back?
Well,
oh, I
they
guess
had to...
We might have missed out on the next Tiger Woods because these guys had to play with a bad golfer.
They had
the
to
tournament.
Wait for 40 like, extra shots. Yeah, the guy was stink. Slow. He's chunking off the tee.
It is crybabies. Honestly, like, everybody has to cry about everything now. And, like, again, there's nothing. And like, I think this is a great punishment. I think it's hilarious. It's unbelievably creative. I give full points to them for doing this, like, as a group.
A
because for them to go through the entire process of it, also for the guy to follow through, like, our league actually abandoned booby prizes because we had no one follow through on the actual booby prizes. They got so elaborate and big, and it was just you had no follow through. So I admire them actually making sure it got done, and I really admire the guy who went and shot that score, that he was out there with these two guys who obviously hated his guts the entire time, just miserable, texting their friends, oh, he's taking too many shots, oh, boo-boo, bee-boo. I think that's hilarious. I think it's awesome and good for them. I'm fantasy football over guys who think they're going to be great golfers any day of the week, like every
also,
single day.
Also, are
of
you
the week.
That serious a golfer if you're texting during your round?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. These golfers, like, yeah, he's real resolve on you guys. Real tough dudes.
Use the text line 59590 to send in the best booby. What did you say? Booby prizes?
Booby prizes. Ours
booby
that
prizes
we had planned
that you've
was
done.
You had to run a 10K in the shirt of the choosing of the people in the league. And it just never ended up materializing.
I like that one.
It was good, and it obviously we were never going to take the T-shirt too far, but it didn't end up. It was always like, oh, well, there's work, and I can't do this 10K, and basically it was just a bunch of lazy boneses who didn't train for this, and anyway, whatever. They didn't do it. You still owe me, they still owe me a run, but whatever.
Okay, so yeah, send those in if you have fun ones. I want to read them. Good luck in your fantasy football next year, and hopefully that doesn't happen to you. All right, moving on. So, everybody loves a good firing story, the drama, the intrigue, what happened, the gossip. Similarly, being let go from a sports team kind of follows that same kind of excitement of what happened. Well, Brazilian soccer star Marcelo lost his first team spot with the French club Lyon for continuously farting and laughing in the locker room. Legitimate reason.
This
he was reportedly initially bumped down to the reserve squad in August for laughing during a teammate's speech who was trying to boost morale after a loss. Sounds like JD when I try to be positive. But new information shows that he was actually punished for incessantly farting in the dressing room and laughing around the team manager and director. He now plays for Bordeaux. No updates currently on how the situation is going with that team. Just probably the most embarrassing professional sports demotion that I've heard.
I could
didn't
not
realize
again.
Dwight Howard played soccer.
Again, this is a crime. Like, if this is if this is true, which it cannot
be. Oh, it's true.
I know the story.
ESPN report.
Yeah. Well,
they never get it wrong.
Yeah, no, they've never. No one has ever reported something incorrectly and made it all the way to ESPN. If this is true, it's one of the greatest crimes in the history of sports. Like, it's so bad. Part of being a guy and being around other guys is you get to fart and laugh at your farts. That's like the number one code of being. You can be with a stranger. You're just in around men. You're with the guys. You're with the fellas. You're with your teammates, your brothers, and you fart and you laugh. And guess what the code is? You have two options as the other guy. You either laugh along with it. Oh, actually, you have three. You respond with a fart of your own, which is, you know, probably the best of the options. Like, really, if you're able to, especially if you can outdo the fart that was just created first. Wow, what an amazing move. Or you can do the just, oh, you're sick, and join the people with the covering of their noses or acting like they've never smelled a fart before, whatever, that group. But you cannot dime somebody out and ask them to be kicked off of a team. Obviously, this guy sucks. Like, this guy sucks so hard. Because for you to get kicked off the team for something that is a genuinely enjoyable experience for everybody involved, which is the fart game, you suck. You suck so bad. Marcello, you don't want to hang out with Marcello because he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy.
Oh, God. Yeah, never have I ever played with a teammate that's ever had a situation such as this, because girls don't fart, obviously. We're perfect specimens of human.
You're really
existence.
Missing out. It's great.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, it's really great. Like, again, the fart game, highly recommend game. More. Fart game, really, is one of my favorite games. Like, it's one of all of our favorite games. It's so good. You're like, it's the best. It's again, under the circumstances, if there's one person that's the king of the fart game constantly, it's like, oh, wow, you really need to go see a doctor, that's different. But again, I'm telling you, the real story here is yet to be uncovered. This guy obviously sucks and is a jerk, and everybody hates him. And maybe he's like, he's taking it too far. Maybe he's cupping him. He's cupping
so
him.
So disgusting.
Oh, you're thinking there's a Scooby snack.
Yeah. I think this guy's a cupper, and I think this guy is, you know, going just straight cheeks, you know, around the lot. Like, there's just all kinds of. There's some secondary stories.
There's pink eye in that locker room.
Okay, entirely too much fart talk today. just a quick text line.
You brought it up. You're in charge of this segment. What do you mean?
Yeah, I know. You can't go.
We're ready to move on.
The segment is about farts, and then bring it to two guys.
Well, we didn't need to get into cupping and pink eye. I think that might have.
We're trying to get to the bottom of this. We're journalists.
Yeah, we are. Blake is a serious journalist, honestly.
Are multiple texts.
Imagine
text
seeing
about
a guy with pink eye the day after this story gets released, though. Like, there's like this story happens. They're like, Marcello, off the team for farting. And then you see, like, the shot of all the soccer players before the game where they're all just, like, standing in the line. So, like, listening to the anthems, and there's the big no racism thing that's in the middle, and then like you're doing the pan across of the guys, they're looking at the anthem, and there's just like red eyes all in the bunch. I need that to be the story here. I need that to be the thing.
Okay, so last one on the A list, maybe this happened because one of them was farting too much, but Nick Foligno revealed that he used to share a bedroom with his younger brother Marcus up until he was married. The two of them shared a bedroom, two professional hockey players bunked together till he was married. So Nick married his wife Janelle in 2011 when he was 24, and he still shared a room with his brother. And I don't know if that's like weird or heartwarming. Is it a stepbrothers 2.0 where they have the bunk beds? And anyway,
I don't know.
Maybe
I would imagine that
he was farting too much.
Well, here's the thing: the two of them would have spent so much time apart with their careers, and like, there are different things that even when they're like, oh, we shared a room up until this point, it's kind of like, well, what actually is the quote-unquote share a room? Because they're not living together, spending 24 hours and 7 days a week together. It's like, how many days are we actually talking about here? Because if it's like...
Blake, you have the stats.
Well, no, but this is something that I am a little suspect of in terms of... Yeah, you can bunk with your brother in the same room for... I think I could do it... For me, like, for everyone, the number is different. But I think I could sleep in the same room as my brother for a whole month of a year. Like, 30 whole days of a year. Anything more...
Spread out, though.
Yeah. Spread out. Like, oh, yeah, 30 in a row? No, we'd kill each other. Like, and by kill each other, I mean he'd kill me because he's much stronger and bigger. So it's like I'd be dead at, like, I don't know, day 4. But spread out, I could easily do 30 days sleeping in the same room as my brother. Like, you could do easily. Like, I could actually probably get more in spread
out. Yeah, I think you could get the 50. Like, one a week is not 50. That bad.
Sure, yeah, okay, sure. One a week is not that bad. So it's really not that crazy. But what I'm, I guess, a little bit more envious of is that these two guys would want to be doing that up until 24 years old. Like, that's pretty admirable. That's like an awe moment. Yeah, brothers. Yeah.
Okay, so an awe, heartwarming moment. I love that. Quickly before we go to break, two texts and we'll cycle back to the previous A-list topic. Steven Allison, we have a guy who I don't know if I can read that, but comes to the floor at our office just to fart and usually acts if he did nothing. And then he goes, I had a coworker who would fart and then call another coworker over to his screen and say, like, to call him to look at his screen. But he had just
again,
farted, so.
I'm telling you,
where does this guy work?
No, that anywhere in the North America, anywhere in the world. Like, that's just, that's a any workplace thing ever. Like, it's funny. It's really funny. We have, I know who, I won't expose who our workplace farter is, but we have like an epic workplace farter at the Fan. Like, truly, like one of the greats. One of the greatest of all.
This is interesting because we, A-List and I, have not been at the company long enough to know. Like, we've done very few shows in studio.
No, we have one of the greatest.
Maybe we shouldn't
farters.
Be coming back because JD's pro farts.
Of course. I'm so pro farts. I'm pro farts. I'm pro farts in the workplace. I'm pro farts everywhere. Okay, like I said, Marcello is obviously the worst guy. He's the worst guy to get kicked off the team and have them put it out this way. Also, it's actually kind of embarrassing. If I was the rest of his teammates, I would say, please don't say this is the reason. Say anything else because it makes the rest of us look like the worst guys ever. Like, wait, he farted and we kicked him off the team? Who wants to play on the team where you're not allowed to fart? Not me, that's for sure. That team sucks. Brew that team. That team is brutal. Let's take a break. Let's get back into the Leafs. What a night. What a win. How much does this go towards the killer instinct? MVPs, Jack Campbell, Sheldon Keefe. And what are we supposed to make of John Cooper's comments after the game yet again? Are they actually controversial? Jen Botterill, she's next. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ayler, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.